Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. I got ahead of myself. A little bit nervous, juggling too many things at once. But first of all, good morning. It's Monday, December 27th. We're approaching the new year. I hope everyone had a good Christmas. Thank God we didn't have too much snow, at least in the local area in Westchester County, which helps, you know, because it's so difficult when the snows really pile up. Well, we're going to begin the day, as we always do on Monday, with John Bailey. He's the White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. And he'll be on from 10 to 10:30. And then at 10:30, we're going to speak to Michael Edelman, who's a national political analyst and pundit. And then thereafter, at 11 o'clock, I'll be talking to you about some international issues and some local concerns, which you may find interesting as well. So we'll just see where that goes. I'm going to give John Bailey another shot, and we'll see if we can get him. Otherwise, we won't. There he is. He's calling now. Bear with me a moment as we pull him in. Good morning, John. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Hezzy. I'm having problems with my cell phone answering it. It's so overloaded with apps that I don't press the right buttons and it starts strange. I mean, it is nothing but an advertising medium which clutters up the communication process.
Well, that's so very, very true. And I've noticed that myself here at my end. I think we're getting so overwhelmed with garbage in every telecommunication capacity and machinery that we have, and it's getting very, very trying. I don't know when the industry will start to ratchet it down a bit or create a mechanism so that it can be there on the side, which is one thing, but not while we're trying to get a discourse happening on the phone. That's the whole point of the phone, isn't it? At least I thought so. So
yes, it
so
has
it
now
goes.
Become a media. That's what it is now.
That's the problem.
No. Yes.
That really is the problem. That puts it all.
Yes.
Well,
and,
I got to ask you about... Go ahead. Finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Yes, I just wanted to apologize for our listeners for this... incident. It's happened now a couple of weeks, and it's been going on for 3 or 4 days. I can't answer the phone, and so that is the problem. I'm sorry.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Well, I wanted to ask you about something that actually is coming up for me tomorrow, and what you've already done, and that is you invited Bob Marone. Formerly, he presided on the WVOX 1460 AM radio that's based in New Rochelle for many, many, many years. And he had a tremendous following, and I think he still does. So he's very well respected from the past. How did the interview go with him, and what did you learn? I'm going to actually have him on tomorrow. So I've been following in your footsteps, Mr. Bailey.
He's doing very well. I mean, he is now working as a contract publicity man for Choice of New York, which is a volunteer organization. It serves 2,500 people, and basically they serve the homeless. It has nothing to do with abortion at all. It is simply a volunteer organization which connects people who are challenged, the homeless, gets them housing, your person's getting out of prison, going back into society, or getting out of rehab, people who have no one, who are basically walking back into the world isolated and have great needs. And that's what the organization does. They reach out, find homes, and facilitate appearances and medical appointments. That's what he's doing now, and he's also appearing on Westchester Talk Radio, doing a show, the worldwide situation, much I like Blog Talk Radio. That's what he's doing.
That's terrific. I'm so pleased for him because I think his exit from WVOX wasn't the most pleasant. And that has to do with management, had nothing to do with him. So it's and so it goes. You know, we fall in love, we fall out of love, we have relationships, we don't have relationships. It's amazing how we vacillate as a human species. We vacillate back and forth. I wonder if monkeys go through the same problem, but who knows? They're not talking, the monkeys.
No. See no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil. That is the way it goes, except on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all those other places which do that.
Good point. You know, all that social media stuff, it has become deleterious, don't you, to the manner by which we civilly respond to one another, where there's a little bit greater infusion of intellect and heart in what we do. And we're getting vicious through the social media platforms. It's getting really pathetic, as if we can hide behind our name or make-believe name and just never know. But we've lost civility. It bothers me. I don't know if we'll ever get it back.
Well, what Twitter allows you to do, in fact, Jack Tapper, the CNN correspondent, he withdrew from Twittering because he felt it was compromising his reportability because of offering opinions on Twitter and having him attacked or him attacking other things. So he stopped it. And I did that after 2 weeks. I realized I'm going to get in trouble shooting my mouth off on Twitter. You know? And I stopped it.
Well, that was very smart. I think there's no need to engage people because you don't know who you're engaging. Like, you and I are talking, so there's respect, and we may disagree, but we're not going to kill each other over it, but we respect each other's perspective. But when you go out on a platform like Twitter or anything else like it, or even Facebook or whatever you want to look at, to be honest, I've only heard of Instagram, and I have not been on it. And the bottom line is, we don't know who we're talking to.
Instagram is simply a publicity gimmick for girls and actors who want to show off.
Uh-huh. Well,
that's what Instagram
is. I guess I'm not pretty enough for that.
Well, be that as it may.
Thank you.
This is what Instagram is used for, and it's also, it's very young women use it, actresses use it, famous actresses, down on their luck, trying to re-salvage their fading careers, and also keeping in the public eye.
Yeah.
Publicity is everything.
No, it's funny. I think we treat women in the arts not necessarily in a good way, in fact, in a deleterious way. And women have become a flavor of the day or the month, and then they're dismissed, I guess, for something prettier or whatever. And I don't know if we're ever going to overcome that, but that seems to be an old standard that maybe was created, I don't know, by Madison Avenue. Would you put the blame on them? Or is it on the proclivities of men who need to subjugate, someone, and it turned out to be women?
A combination of the two, because
Madison
Avenue did sell things a lot by appealing to women or getting women spokespersons that were good to look at.
Yeah.
The Edie Adams cigar ads for Muriel.
I remember those so well. I'm so
they
old.
They were great. Well, she had to do that. Edie Adams had to do that because her husband, Ernie Kovacs, died, but he had the show contract, and he also had the cigar account with Muriel as a spokesperson, so she took that over. And she was a very smart person, but she lost Kovacs, her husband, at a very young age.
Very young. I remember those days.
But that was one of the first of it. And then you had, but the original spokesladies were not exactly, sexually oriented, but that it drifted into that connotations by Westchester Avenue. I'm particularly reminded of the Fly Me campaign for, what was the airline? Fly Me. It was Braniff.
Was that Braniff? I didn't remember that. I do remember the slogan, Fly Me.
Yes, and that was definitely promoting Stuart I on airplanes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Braniff
is
no longer. Maybe that was what killed them.
Yeah.
I don't
think
so.
They were very
popular. Yeah, they were very popular.
Yes, that was.
So it goes.
So it goes, indeed.
Enlightened, hopefully.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about something else that's really quite interesting, and that is that Westchester County is engaged right now in many communities over whether marijuana dispensaries for medical and as well for personal use should be authorized in certain communities. And you had an interview with town supervisor Paul Feiner of Greenberg. And he explained their decision. How did that go, and what was his rationale?
Well,
I have
he
no
was
idea
opposed
which is the
to
smartest
it.
Way to go.
Yeah.
That's what
he
I
was
thought.
Opposed to it. And what they did was he engaged his various communities, and they had forums on it, and he really publicized the fact that this, and the board publicized it, and that he engaged with the community and got a feeling. And three towns opted out of it, and three towns opted in, and the town of Greenberg opted in only for the dispensary feature. They reserve decision on the ability to have recreational marijuana establishments where you go in and you buy it and you linger and smoke or do whatever
you know
do
what
with
I
marijuana.
Found interesting? I didn't know about marijuana until I first visited Canada. And this was years ago, but it had nothing to do with marijuana, but it was the manner by which the Canadians had set up a structure that was that had oversight by government, and this was specifically with regard to alcohol and the sale of alcohol. And you could only buy alcohol, this was maybe 40 years ago, through places that were authorized by the government, and there was government oversight, and you had to meet certain requirements to buy or whatever. And so it was very regulated. You had to show identification. You had to show proof of ID, of age, and so on and so forth. And I thought that that would eventually be a standard for those communities that wanted to have a dispensary, so that there was oversight by government on the one hand, so that people would abide by the law and that the dispensaries wouldn't feel a need to satisfy a customer when the law forbade it because they didn't have the appropriate proof. So everyone was on watch to see that everybody would do the right thing. And I don't think we have a mechanism like that in the United States. Because even though, like, you're not supposed to be able to buy alcohol in the United States unless you're a certain age, I see young people buying their beer and their other types of drink, even at you know, what do you call it, whatever the stores are, you know, where they sell all kinds of liquor.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that's because these liquor stores in New York State particularly are allowed to be privately owned. They're licensed by the state liquor authority, but they are run by individual proprietors that do not have to go through any courses, and they are not government employees. But I believe there are some states who have state liquor dispensaries, but I can't remember one offhand. But unless you actually have the government running each store and each person is a government employee, you know, and i.e. they don't have to make a certain as much profit as possible, okay?
Uh-huh.
The proprietor wants to make as much profit as possible. So, therefore, there is much more inclination to look the other way. That's why the state has to send inspectors around to check for carding and whether in sales to underagers are being practiced by organizations. And I don't think there are enough of those inspections being done.
No, I don't think so.
Think...
I know that sometimes there are kids that are hanging around a liquor store and they give some adult or someone older than they who would qualify to buy something, and they give them a couple of bucks, and they get it for them, and off they go. I'm very concerned. It's bad enough when young kids get inebriated because of drink, but I really wonder if kids that are old enough to drive might end up smoking marijuana, and the high that you get from it might cause them to crash, and then there's no... or get into an accident, hurt themselves or hurt others, and it's never been ameliorated. Or we don't know
have
how
any regulations yet.
We don't. So why are we
don't.
Going
and
ahead
that's
with the dispensaries?
Yeah, Mr. Feiner was really concerned about that, and he felt they should hang back on the recreational item, and they did. The board voted only for the dispensaries. And, however, the point is there still is no regulations put out by the Commission of Cannabis Management. And I think, hey, it's about time we had something. They've been working on it for 4 months. And
absolutely.
Supposedly.
Isn't it time for the New York State Legislature to come up with something that's actually going to be credible? Because we're going to have people who might be you know, using the drug for medical reasons, it may not overwhelm their system because maybe their system requires it in order to get a balance. But like other types of drugs that are used, but what about people who are going to get high from it, and what do we do with them? And what are the ramifications? God forbid,
how do the police figure it out? Yeah, how do the police figure it out? I mean, there's no test for marijuana
use.
No test. Without a test, I don't see how you can. There's no guidance as far as charging for driving under the influence. There's no guide of marijuana, and this is a real. It does not make sense to legalize something and not know how it is going to be legally distributed and managed. There's no defense. This was a horrible decision by the legislature simply because they wanted money. And, of course, heavily lobbied by the marijuana for-profit organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand. But then what was the rationale? Whereas Mr. Feiner, the town supervisor, was against approving the process, what was the rationale for people who wanted these dispensaries in their community? because the town has, what, four or five different communities under its wing. Like Dobbs Ferry is one, another, and there are others as well. But what was the rationale for having it? Is it for them? Is it the money?
It's the money.
It's the money.
It's always the money.
Always the money. And how many people? When do we reach a limit of how many people can die in order for us to get the money?
The rationale.
I wonder
if
there's.
This is what I fear, is that we have enough drivers driving drunk that enter highways with in the wrong direction. We haven't had one of those in a while, but this is what driving under the influence of alcohol does. There also is the problem of marijuana creating delusions. And so you don't know how fast you're going. So I think you're going to have a lot more speeding accidents if you're toking while driving.
You know, to be honest with you, I remember when I was very, very, very young. I was like under 20. And I was dating this girl. And what ended up happening is we went to a party. And at the party, they were passing a joint. And she coaxed me into it, or I submitted to her womanly charms, and I said, "Oh well," she said, "Well, go ahead, try it. It's not bad or anything, whatever." So the bottom line is, I did, and I took a toke, and evidently it affected me, and later on, I ended up driving home. She was in the building where we were where she was celebrating with some people that she knew, and then I drove home. And but to be honest with you, John, I don't know how the hell I got home, because I don't remember getting into the car, and I don't remember how I got home. I didn't remember a thing, and I must have traveled about 5 miles.
You know, the same incident happened to me. I mean, when I station I worked at, the same incident. I was working in Washington for a television station when I was a kid in a trainee program, WMIL-TV, Channel 7. And we had a newscaster on Friday nights who used to invite the crew home to his house in Chevy Chase for party, you know. And I wound up having 6 screwdrivers.
Okay.
And I left at 4 in the morning. And I tell you, I get on the Beltway, and I remember going. Now, the Beltway is a 4-lane road. And I remember going from the far left lane to the far right lane and not realizing it. I was really, you know, driving while intoxicated. It is fortunate that no police person pulled me over.
Yeah.
I would have been in jail for some time, and I got home, and I'll never forget it, and I never have more than 1 or 2 drinks since that incident.
Well, I never picked up a joint again, and because I was in shock that I didn't remember. But I knew that I had left one place, and that I got home, and I didn't remember a thing. And yet I know the road even to this day. I could visualize it, and I always traveled it, and I would never do it again. And then somehow or another, the relationship fell apart. But that has nothing to do with the marijuana or my wanting to get in her good graces. That's how silly boys are, and that's what I was, a boy, evidently, even though I thought I was an adult male. But
really
there
are a lot
stupid.
Of boys our age, too, Hezzy, don't forget.
That's true, too.
Yes, you could be 65 years old and make terrible decisions.
Well, I'm 72, and I think, unfortunately, I may still make them. You know, so that's the prospect. You got to always worry about them.
Absolutely. It's very difficult. You have to, you know, there's always the temptation is always at work.
Absolutely. There isn't that much time left. We've got less than 5 minutes now. But there is a continuing escalation of the COVID crisis. And it's not under control. It's seemingly out of hand. And the new variant is really may not be as violent to our system as the Delta. However, more and more people are getting infected. And I got my third dose, and I was thrilled on the there's like an app from New York State Plus or whatever, and they update all that information. So I checked again, and everything's there. So I've got three inoculations. But in Israel, I hear they're giving a fourth.
Well, right now, I do not. The CDC seems to be lurching day to day on this whole issue. I just don't think there's enough data on the spread
that's
currently sweeping the country. So therefore, they're erring on the caution side and suggesting a fourth dose. But
yeah, exactly.
You know, I've had three doses.
What happens.
And but I'll tell you this. Something happened to me Saturday night after our Christmas Day celebration. I was really tired, so I went to bed about 10. And 1 a.m. I woke up, which is very unusual for me, and I was in a sweat. I was hot. And I said, oh, my God, you know?
Yeah.
What is this? Is this a fever? Have I got it? I have never felt so much fear in my life.
Yeah.
I went downstairs. I had some ice-cold iced tea to try and get my temperature down. I was very thirsty. But then, like last night, I was fine when I slept, and there was not, you know, I just dressed lighter. I think maybe I had overheated myself by dressing too warmly for bed. But still, that fear is something I've never experienced before.
Well, I'm glad you got over it, but it is something to be concerned about for sure, definitely.
Yes. But,
I think a lot of
us
don't really understand all the ramifications, and I don't know if the CDC explains it well, or even if people are paying attention. That's the other thing, too. I think we're overwhelmed by the information that comes out, and it doesn't somehow stay within our system. It's like we're oblivious to it. We're in denial, and I don't know why.
We are in the denial
phase.
Maybe
that's the
right
reason
now,
people aren't paying attention.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right now, Westchester is averaging 2,000 cases a day last Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And that's out of sight. That is out of sight. We've never had that many cases in a day. We only had it once back in last January, and now we're having double that each day. So it's spreading. And I do not want to see the test results within about a week.
Neither
do
I.
Either. So people have to be
aware. Don, any last minute message from you other than, you know, Happy New Year to you and your family and to the people you associate with for a great 2022. I can't believe it. 2022 is around the corner.
Yes. Well, I just think that persons should be take care in celebrating, and only celebrate with people you know, small crowds, and all I can say. And try to get vaccinated. Overcome your fear of vaccinating. And don't listen to people telling you what to do on the tube or whatever, because it's only you can make the decision as to what to do that's best for you and your children. In fact, in the Netherlands, they're all shut down because of the amount of school children that have been affected. I was reading that this morning. So, I mean,
well, John, unfortunately, we're going to need to save that till next time. So just a happy new year. And thank you very, very much. My best to your wife as well and the kids. Take care.
It's been a pleasure working with you.
My pleasure.
So
take
long
care.
For now.
Bye. Well, we have none other than Michael Edelman, the national political analyst and pundit, on the line. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy.
Well, what a pleasure to speak to you, as it always is, every Monday. It starts off the week on the right footing. Well, you know, one of the things that it never dawned on me to discuss because it is so, fraught with all kinds of hurdles, and that is critical race theory. What is it that people don't understand about it, and why is it so important?
Well, first of all, the recent election in Virginia, where Youngkin won, had a lot to do with alleging that critical race theory was being taught in public school. So we need to start out with the premise that it's not being taught in public schools. It's a graduate course that is taught at the graduate level. Critical race theory is an attempt to examine the relationship between the law and race in the United States. And parents have misinterpreted it to be an attempt to make their white kids feel bad about blacks, which is not what happens because it's not taught. So these parents have been storming these school board meetings, demanding that, in one case, that a black principal in Texas step down based on critical race theory, when in fact it's not being taught in public schools at all. There's nothing wrong, by the way, with examining the relationship between slavery and our institutions as they have evolved. And there is no question that slavery has affected the way the United States has evolved as a nation. So if parents don't want that discussed, then they simply don't want history to be discussed.
So how did it percolate to the top of people's minds? Who misconstrued it for them to tell them what was going on at the levels of higher education that it all permeated?
Well, who do you think these people listen to for their primary source of information?
Fox News. Fox
Bingo. Bingo.
Are we ever going to get rid of Fox News, or do we have to wait for the Murdochs to die?
Well, the kids are not going to die soon, but the old man needs to leave the scene because he's doing a lot of damage. A lot of damage to the democratic institutions and to the democracy, period.
And why is that not resonating with our nation? Do people recognize that? Some do.
Some do.
But that's
some
also part of that divide, isn't it? So we're at each other's throats rather than having a discussion.
That's correct.
And why can't we agree to how we define news and how we define opinion? And should we not even legislate that opinion can be on an opinion station and news can be on another type of station? I mean, certainly the Fox people can afford one. They can afford another license.
Well, what Fox has done shrewdly is to masquerade as a news organization and to claim that they're dealing in fact, when in fact their entire primetime lineup has nothing to do with facts and everything to do with propaganda.
And do you think the fact that so many of the opinion makers on Fox had reached out to the president with unbeknownst to the public at the time that they reached out to him, you know, with respect to the January 6th insurrection and other situations like that, they were guiding him, you know, telling him what they thought would be best for him, not that he needed them to tell him what to do, whether he was right or wrong. But the temerity of actually reaching out to the president, or maybe I'm just too much of a weakling and believe that there is a system that, you know, the president is the president, and they don't need to be told. Yeah.
Well, no, it's about journalism, journalistic ethics. A journalist
Correct.
Is supposed to be objective and fact-driven, and is not supposed to be an advisor to any political party. So,
Correct.
And if they are, it needs to be disclosed. So when I did 25 years of News 12 as the Republican
yeah.
spokesman, every time we had an election, if I was working for one of the candidates in the election, Jeanine Rose would disclose it to the viewers.
Correct.
So that's what should happen when Jeanine Pirro runs down to Mar-a-Lago and Sean Hannity talks to Trump every night on the telephone to give advice on what to say, how to say it. And then when there's an insurrection, they call up Mark Meadows pleading with him to get Trump to call it off, and they immediately turn around and go on television and try to play it down. So they knew what was right or wrong, but for their audiences, they also knew they could easily mislead them into thinking that the January 6th insurrection wasn't an insurrection at all. It was just an Antifa protest, which is what Laura Ingraham has said. Even while they were pleading with Meadows to get Trump to knock it off.
Forgive me, because maybe I was the one that veered us off the topic, but because we were talking about critical race theory, are we at each other's throats to the point where we will not be discussing it? Is that the intent of so many people who want to just throw it out from the consciousness of people's minds so that, you know, this storyline continues and it continues to separate us as a society because we're not dealing in issues and we have no intention for resolution?
Yeah, this is not about issues. This is about preserving white Christian power, whether it's
uh-huh.
in the school system or in government.
Yeah.
This is about not recognizing the demographic change, the violent demographic change that is coming, where whites will be a minority in the United States and black and brown people will be in the majority, and more local, state, and national offices will be won by them in an election. And that is what people fear. They feel the loss of power.
Well, you know, I got
to
ask.
That's why they're willing.
You know,
to
I happen to be I happen to be Jewish, and my parents came to this country years ago because they found relatives that survived the Holocaust,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't settle when they came here,
right.
but I came years later. But the point is, I remember there was a guy by the name of Javits. He was a senator. They were very
yeah.
proud of the fact that here's this Jewish guy who was well respected, and I don't know all his policies, but it didn't really matter. And when he lost eventually over time, it didn't matter. And I don't feel somehow forlorn or undermined because someone of a different ethnicity or age or gender or whatever is in power. There's some people's positions I may not agree with, but I don't feel like, you know, I'm belittled or somehow I won't get the time of day.
Well,
you weren't at the
Charlottesville demonstration when these people holding torchlights were chanting, "Jews shall not replace us." So this is
I know, but we never did.
we never did
replace them.
Who would
them.
Want to? Yeah, who would want
exactly.
to? So, yeah, exactly. Jews are 2% of the United States. 2%, 6 million.
Oh, I didn't even know we were 2%. I thought we were at 1%. Whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're moving up in this world. What are we having more babies?
Yeah,
what's going on?
Right. No, I don't think so. It's just that at 2%, you would think that this has been an undercurrent, by the way, in Republican right wing politics for decades. William F. Buckley Jr. in the 1950s stepped in to lead conservatism, and he made sure that there was no anti-Semitism in the party. He banished the John Birch Society and other fringe elements and stuck to ideology.
But
I remember him so well because I was in awe of his intellect and his vocabulary. I would write down the words I didn't know, and there were so many of them.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely brilliant mind. And I couldn't always, I hate to admit it, I couldn't follow him at all the time. He was way above me.
Well, he was brilliant. the point I'm making is that he made sure that ideology was what attracted people, not hate. You know, he wasn't a hater. And so now you have reemergence of the fringe, which has always been there in the Republican Party, of people that want to preserve white power. It's the Steve Bannons. And unfortunately, they had a vessel in the presidency of Donald Trump.
Yeah. Is it conceivable that we'll get back to a sense of the conservatism of the past, where there was dialogue? Or have we forgotten that and we don't even know how to bring it back, even if we tried? Are we just going to be at each other's throats for another 50 years? I won't be around for that, but, you know,
I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not
a fortune teller. You can't pontificate about that. It's okay.
It's too complicated.
It is.
All I can say is that there are mainstream Republicans that are taking sides and speaking out against the cult of Trumpism and against these radical radical reactionaries. They're not conservatives, these people that are marching following Trump. Whatever their grievances are, they want to deconstruct the republic. They want to tear it down and start all over with white Christian ideology, government ideology. People like Marjorie Taylor Greene say that out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
White Christian fundamentalism to be what the government stands for. Whereas the framers made sure that separation of church and state, that was one of their core beliefs. But the current crop of right-wing congressmen don't believe that.
Well, you know, one thing is interesting, the age of the people who are part of the division, they seem to be young. You know, they're in their teens, they're in their 20s, they're in their 30s. They're not going to go away right away. So it seems like we're going to have a schism within our nation for many, many years to come. I find it a very terrifying outcome. Even though I can't prognosticate what will happen over the next 10 or 20 years. But it doesn't sound like we're going to be cohesive as a nation, and I don't know how we're going
problems,
to divide.
So you have the Internet, and any fool can get on the Internet and post a conspiracy theory that isn't based in fact, and somebody will read it and believe it. And there are enough people in this country who are undereducated, who can't distinguish between fact and fiction, who are more than happy to go down these rabbit holes and chasing these conspiracy theories.
Mm.
One of which, by the way, is that the Jews control media.
Well, that's true. I don't think that Jews do control media. I don't even know why it ever came out to be. Is like Sulzberger, the guy who owned the New York Times. Was that a Jewish family?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe it came because of the influence of the New York Times. I'm not quite sure.
Oh no, I think it resulted. There's a lot of media have Jewish journalists, and it's very easy.
Yeah.
It's one of the professions that a lot of Jewish kids pursued, going to journalism school, getting a degree in journalism. So whether it's Chuck Todd.
Right.
Or Jake Tapper, or Chris Wallace, three anchors, all of whom are Jewish.
Oh, I didn't know they were all Jewish.
Yes. Very easy to...
Wow, that's amazing.
You know, So is Andrea Mitchell. So is Andrea Mitchell. So is Dana Bash. All right.
Really?
So it's very easy. It's very easy to make the jump from the what you see on television at Monday through Friday to control of the media, when in fact most of the media is not owned by Jews at all. ABC's a stock company.
Yeah. Well, I was told the stories in the old days back in the during before the World War and during the World War, the boys had to drop their drawers in order to find out if they were or they were not circumcised. But I never thought that that was done with our news reporters to find out if they were or they weren't, or how even people would even think about that.
If you go to Wikipedia, you'll find out. You got the Jeff Zuckers of the world who are the boss at CNN, but CNN is he doesn't own
CNN. Zucker, I understand, because I speak German and I knew that that was a German Jewish name, Zucker, which means sugar. So many things like that. So that's how I know, but otherwise, I never would look up someone's so-called pedigree. It never dawned on me. I guess I'm a stupid one.
Well, if you're a hater and you're on the internet and you're posting this and posting that, and you have this information, you can whip up a frenzy very easily.
Yeah, unbelievable. Are we going to get to a point where we can balance out perspective that may be even balanced with opinion? So that people can understand one's position, but also can learn what the truth is. Like, you espouse a position.
Not as long as you have media outlets that aren't interested in facts.
So when do we change? Is that all part of the Murdoch dynamic?
Well,
that's what he came up with? I mean, did that start out in Australia?
With Sky News, I believe. That's what he does.
From England.
His model, his business model, is to create a false narrative that attracts a certain viewership, and to keep doing that. So these people believe what they're hearing on Fox News, and there are millions of people that watch it, and that brings the advertising dollars to Fox News, and that's his business model. He's not looking to make it a real news reporting network. He's looking to make money.
Well, I got to ask you, I haven't really studied it. For example, I know in Israel there are many, many newspapers. There are maybe four or five or six TV stations. They all report the news. But I don't think that there's government oversight to positions. But somehow there seems to be different segments of society in America where, you get one perspective from the Washington Post, another from the Wall Street Journal, another from the New York Times, the New York Post, the New York Daily News, and the L.A. Times, and so on, Chicago Tribune. Is there any regulation, or can anybody, if they have enough money, put together an organization and go to it?
B. Yes. Yeah.
That's a little frightening, but I guess you don't want government control in order to make it free.
Well, no, you can't have government control. You got the First Amendment.
Right.
But when I just had an FEC complaint, by the way, dismissed. The complaint that I filed over three years ago alleged, if you're interested, that Sean Hannity and Jeanine Pirro appeared at a political rally of Josh Hawley in Missouri on behalf of his candidacy for federal office, and that by doing so, they brought the Fox News imprimatur with them, since they were both Fox employees at the same time, and that as a result, there was an illegal, in-kind contribution made by Fox. So after 3 years, the decision is really complicated. That they went to the statutes, and what we should know is Fox News was notified, obviously, since they were defendants. And this is part of a statement that Fox News issued. Following the conclusion of Hannity's show, President Trump made some introductory remarks and invited Hannity and Pirro on stage to speak. Fox News asserts that neither Hannity nor Pirro came to the stage with prepared written remarks. So what? Following the rally, Fox News subsequently issued a statement that it does not condone any talent participating in campaign events. This was an unfortunate distraction and has been addressed. So Fox News knows that these two talent people were doing something they shouldn't have been doing. Mm. And if nothing else, my complaint will stop them from doing it again.
Wow. And so was that the final resolution?
Well, yeah, they didn't piss it.
Because
they
got
slapped
on the wrist.
Yeah, well, the point was that the network was put in a shitty position because of its two, right? So this has been going on. This complaint has been pending for, I don't know, December 18th, 2020 was, I mean, sorry, November was the 2016 was the date of the election. So it's been a three or four year pending thing. But finally, and Fox News and Jeanine Pirro and Sean Hannity all were contacted and all had to issue statements in defense of what they did. And their defense
was
amazing. They were acting on their own behalf. But my argument was, I don't care that you say you're acting on your behalf. When you have two Fox News people appear at a federal event, it's pretty clear that Fox News supports what they're appearing at.
Well, that's the salient perspective for sure. Absolutely. Amazing, amazing. The law is a little bit muddled, isn't it, then?
Well, they shouldn't allow the on-air talent. No other network has ever had on-air talent from the so-called news department appear at a rally.
Right. Mm-hmm.
These Fox News people, they know they're not journalists. They're in the business of electing Donald Trump. That's their business.
Right. Well, what's happening on the political landscape? Is it conceivable that the Democrats have lost their prowess somehow after the election of President Biden? Are they losing it? Is it conceivable that they will lose the presidency as well as local contests to the Republican Party? And was the argument against the Republican Party and the former president, did it undermine the credibility of the Democratic Party?
Well, the Democratic Party is having a messaging problem now.
Yeah.
And that's because Joe Biden doesn't really stand up and cheer for his own administration. You remember Donald Trump used to say, the markets hit another high. The markets, he was always pointing to the stock.
Yes, I remember.
Market. Well, the stock market is higher now than it was when Donald Trump was president. All right.
That always concerned me even when I look at local government. They seem not to know how to celebrate the positive issues that have occurred. And they don't know how to contend with contentious issues. And I see that on the national stage presently. And yet Trump was eloquent when it came to that. He seemed to know how to find that fine line. And so he was quite eloquent there. But where is the team of people who work in government today? Is anyone out there willing to step up and point it out the way it is? Is the adversarial perspective the only thing that seems to make sense for some people?
Well, the problem is that Donald Trump was willing to use hyperbole to hype his own record, whether it was true or false. Joe Biden is bound by the facts, and he's not really a PR guy. And it appears to me they really, other than a couple of the pundits like Begala and Carville, they don't have anybody working for this administration that gets out there and says, look, we did this, we did that, we did this, and it's better than it's ever been. I don't hear that. But the truth, the fact of the matter is that unemployment is as low as it's ever been. GDP is 6% or more. And the stock market is at an all-time high. So they need to be saying that in order to compete with the messaging that is coming out of Fox News.
One thing that I found really unnerving was there was a telephone call that was picked up by the president and the first lady. They were holding a conversation, and one guy came up with a line which I had never heard of, would never have known what it meant, which is "Let's go, Brandon," which is evidently an epithet directed to the president. And some guy calls up and uses the term, and unfortunately the president is unaware of its meaning and said, "Let's go, Brandon."
Yeah.
I mean, what's going on here? You know, there used to be a time, and I guess I must be an old man already, I just never found things to be so disrespectful. Am I losing it? I mean, who would ever call the president something with an epithet, no less, even if it was couched in an unknowing way? Because evidently the media explained it to us.
This guy was a wise ass. He's a paramilitary buff. He's a former policeman that had to resign. We don't know why. And when you're speaking to the president of the United States, you have to speak civilly to him. You can't say F you, which is what "Let's go, Brandon" means. It means F Brock Biden. Okay? And what you need here is for what you're lacking is Republican voices speaking out against that.
Hmm.
You don't hear that.
No, I don't hear it at all.
A guy like Mitt Romney, should be standing up and saying, you know, that's unacceptable. Okay? Guy like Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania should be saying it's unacceptable.
Yeah. Why are these people silent? Not like they're deaf and dumb. They must have the same sensibilities that we have. What's wrong? Why are they silenced?
Don't know.
I don't get it.
They're afraid of Donald Trump, I think.
Uh-huh.
Well,
is it conceivable that Donald Trump can return? The reincarnation?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Because
I can't imagine.
The way I see it, I don't see Joe Biden running at 82 years old.
But the only problem
is
that personally, from my perspective, I don't see him running again either. But I don't really think that Kamala Harris has what it takes to be the next in line.
I'm not disagreeing with you. What I think is going to happen is maybe 6 months before the election. He will announce that he is not going to be a candidate in 2024. That's when the primary will begin. Harris will be one of the candidates, but she didn't do all that well last time, and I don't think she's going to do all that well this time because she's not been a serious vice president. This woman, who I thought would be a great candidate, as you remember, I called the ticket a year and a half before as Biden-Harris, but she apparently can't stop laughing when she's asked a question.
I know.
So I don't understand why. Maybe that's her crutch while she's thinking of an answer. But if you're going to be vice president of the United States, You can't let a smirk come over your face every time somebody asks you a controversial question. So, but here's what I think
very
is going to happen.
True.
You're going to get
happen?
Gavin
is
Newsom
it be
from California.
Buttigieg? What?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think he'd be the nominee.
Okay.
I frankly don't think so.
Gay?
He might be vice president. Yes.
Uh-huh. Just because of that. Okay.
Well, I don't think the nation will put a gay man in the White House yet, quite yet.
Okay.
Gavin Newsom
okay.
from California, however, is out of central casting.
Really? Okay.
So,
well, you
keep
can
your
tell
eye
him. You
Gavin
can
Newsom.
Pick him, that's for sure. I will. I'll pay
mark
more
it,
attention
mark
to
down.
Mr. Newsom.
Gavin Newsom.
Okay. Very, very good. Well, unfortunately, I've overstayed my time with you. I want to thank you for
okay.
making the time. I want to wish you and your family a happy new year. And joy and health. And thank you
thank
again
you.
For being on the show. Be well, sir.
My pleasure. See you next year. Bye-bye.
Care. Be well. Bye. Okay, bear with me a moment. Well, we're going to need to move on to the next aspect of our broadcast, so forgive me for that moment. Bear with me a moment here. I want to check to see where I am because I don't know. I was answering a phone call at the same time while saying goodbye to Mr. Edelman. Okay, so bear with me a second here. Let me just see if I did something wrong here. Not quite sure. 1 second. All right, 1 second. All right, we don't need this, and we don't need this. Okay, we do need this. Bear with me a second here. Let's go back to the studio. Hopefully everything's all right. Okay. One moment. All right. I need to do one more thing. Forgive me. I'm sorry for the delay. Press the wrong button. And, okay, I think now we'll be able to get on in a second. Oh, good. Okay, so I think we got to where we needed to be. All right, I think we got there. So, now let's move on to the next aspect of what we need to do. Bear with me a moment here, because I need to look up, 1 second. Go here. 1 minute. All right, one more moment here. Try to catch up with some of the international news. All right. All right. Well, this I think you'll find very interesting. It's a year in review. It's a retrospective about the women who shaped 2021. So they blazed trails, they set new records, they called out injustice, and they faced down oppression. And we take a look at the inspirational women who shaped the past 12 months. So the year 2021 saw female athletes scale new heights at the Tokyo Olympics and press their demands for equality in sports, while Chinese tennis star Peng Shuai was at the heart of the biggest hashtag MeToo scandal to rock the country's political establishment. There were new faces and emotional departures in politics, with Tunisia's Naila Boudin becoming the Arab world's first woman prime minister, even as Europe bid farewell to its most powerful female politician for the past 16 years, Germany's Angela Merkel. The dark side of social media was in the spotlight as U.S. whistleblower Frances Haugen dealt a stinging blow to Facebook and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Maria Ressa, exposed the ravages wrought by fake news and disinformation in her native Philippines. In France, skipper Clarisse Cremer smashed the women's world record for a solo round-the-world race, and jazz age icon Josephine Baker became the first black woman to enter the country's pantheon of heroes. But it was a grim year for Afghan women who defiantly resisted as the Taliban swept back into power at a terrible cost. In chronological order, we look at some of the women who helped shape world events in 2021. So let's look at Clarisse Cremer, around the world in record time. On February 3rd, French skipper Clarisse Cremer triumphantly sailed into the port of Les Sables d'Olon in western France, having smashed the women's record for a solo round-the-world race previously held by Britain's Ellen MacArthur. With thousands gathered to witness history, the 31-year-old wrapped up the grueling Vendée Globe race in 87 days, 2 hours, and 24 minutes, a full 7 days ahead of the mark set by MacArthur 2 decades earlier. The contest was won by Yannick Bestaven, who crossed the finish line in third position, but was handed a time bonus for his role in rescuing a fellow competitor. Cremer became only the seventh woman to complete the treacherous Vendée Globe, one of the most daunting challenges in a sport long dominated by men. She joined a list of trailblazers who have opened competitive sailing to women, along with the likes of MacArthur and the late Florence Artaud, the first woman to win the Route du Rhum transatlantic solo yacht race. Then we have Clarisse Agbenonou, a gold medal for women's rights. At 28, the five-time judo world champion finally picked up her maiden Olympic title in Tokyo this summer, the one triumph that had so far eluded her. 5 years after her bruising final defeat to Slovenia's Tina, I don't know if I pronounced this right, Tristenjak, her great rival, Agbenonou, won the gold medal in the women's 63-kilogram class. That's about 130 pounds class. Now, France's flag bearer at the Tokyo Olympics, Agbenonou, is an inspirational figure on and off the mat, known for battling sexist stereotypes in sport. She was born to Togolese from Togo parents. The former gendarme or police officer has long campaigned for gender equality in sports and other fields traditionally reserved for men. She is known for speaking out on topics often regarded as taboo, including menstruation and pregnancy in competitive sport. The evidence on the field suggests the Agbenonou effect is working, with judo clubs across France reporting a surge in interest among young girls. Then we talk about the Afghan women demonstrating for their rights, standing up to the Taliban. By the end of August, Afghans' women's nightmare scenario had become reality. The Taliban had swept back into power, abruptly rolling back the country's tentative experiment with democracy and women's rights. The women of Afghanistan did not go down quietly, rising up in protest in the country's main cities to defend their right to education, work, and political representation. But arrests, harassment, and murder soon followed. On November 5, the bodies of the women were discovered in a ditch near the northern city of Mazar-e-Sharif, riddled with bullets. Among them was Fourozan Safi, a prominent campaigner for the rights of women and girls in Afghanistan. The Taliban have promised a less brutal rule than in the 1990s, but women are still largely excluded from civil service and secondary education, and they risk reprisals if they venture outside without a male guardian. So reporters who visited Kandahar in October, female witnesses spoke of a surge in beatings, forced marriage, and kidnappings. Afghan women are also on the front line of the economic crisis roiling the country, which has been largely deprived of foreign aid since the Taliban takeover, and documented cases of young girls being sold off by their mothers in order to feed the rest of the family have been recognized. Then we have Naila Boudin. She's the Arab world's first woman prime minister. 2 months after suspending parliament in what critics decried as a power grab, Tunisia's president Hais Saied sprang another surprise in September by appointing a university professor and political unknown as the country's first woman prime minister. Naila Boudin Roumdane, a 63-year-old with a PhD in geology, is also the first woman to hold the post in the Arab world. Prior to her appointment, Boudin held senior positions at Tunisia's education ministry, notably overseeing the implementation of World Bank projects. She faces a daunting challenge as prime minister in a country rocked by political instability and a protracted economic crisis. Boudin's nomination surprised analysts and fueled talk of a public relations stunt by Saied, who is otherwise known for his social conservatism. Skeptics also cast doubt on Boudin's actual room for maneuvering, given the growing concentration of power in the president's hands. Then we have Frances Haugen. She's the whistleblower who took on Facebook. Before October 3rd, most people had never heard of Frances Haugen, but the 37-year-old has become a household name since coming forward as the whistleblower who leaked a cache of internal documents exposing the dark side of Facebook's social media empire. In May this year, Haugen left her position as a product manager at the tech giant, taking tens of thousands of documents with her. The damning evidence, which is shared with U.S. law enforcement and the press, showed that Facebook knew its products were fueling hate and harming children's mental health. Since going public in October, Haugen has appeared before lawmakers in the United States and across Europe, accusing Mark Zuckerberg's company of choosing profit over safety, quote unquote. At each stop, she has called for urgent external regulation to rein in Facebook's management and reduce the harm being done to society. Then we need not forget Maria Ressa, a Nobel Prize winner and Nobel Peace Prize laureate. Documenting the fake news and misinformation spread by social media is at the heart of Maria Ressa's work in her native Philippines. The 58-year-old journalist won the Nobel Peace Prize this year for her, quote, courageous fight for freedom of expression, end quote, sharing the prestigious award with fellow reporter Dmitry Muratov of Russia. She is currently on bail pending an appeal against her conviction in a cyber libel case for which she faces up to 6 years in prison. Ressa heads the investigative news website Rappler, R-A-P-P-L-E-R, a critical source of information on the controversial and brutal war on drugs carried out by the Philippines' hardline president, Rodrigo Duterte, in which thousands of people have been executed by death squads, quote-unquote. And Rappler is one of the few media outlets to have documented the executions and challenged their legality. A former CNN correspondent who also holds U.S. citizenship, Ressa has braved repeated threats and intimidations to pursue her work in the Philippines. She was forced to petition four different courts for permission to travel to Oslo in December and pick up her Nobel Prize before returning home. Then we have Peng Shuai, the face of the hashtag MeToo in China. Where is Peng Shuai The whereabouts of 35-year-old Peng Shuai became the subject of an international scandal in November when the Chinese tennis star went missing for several weeks after she publicly accused Zhang Gaoli, a former deputy prime minister and one of China's most powerful politicians, of coercing her into having sex. Peng is a former world number one in doubles, made the accusations in a November 2nd post on the Chinese social media platform Weibo, W-E-I-B-O, which was promptly erased by state censors. Her subsequent disappearance caused a global outcry, with prominent athletes, foreign governments, and the United Nations expressing their concern for her well-being. The tennis star has since reappeared in photo and video posts whose authenticity has been questioned, and briefly spoke with the head of the International Olympic Committee in an online video call in which she said she was, quote, safe and well, end quote. In a December 20th interview with a Singapore-based daily, she appeared to contradict her earlier statement, denying she had made allegations of sexual assault. The Women's Tennis Association said it was unconvinced by Peng's apparent retraction, reiterating its call for an investigation into her safety. Then we move on to Josephine Baker, from Missouri to the pantheon of French heroes, the first black woman to enter the French pantheon. A star of stage, screen, and song, a resistance fighter, and a civil rights activist, Josephine Baker was symbolically inducted into the French pantheon on November 30, half a century after her death. The American-born icon of the jazz age in Paris became the first black woman to enter France's mausoleum for great men, quote-unquote, and belatedly, great women, too. Born in St. Louis, Missouri, Baker took on many roles during a roller coaster career, straddling continents, epics, and wars. She is best remembered in France, her adopted country, for her Parisian stardom in the Année Folle, the Roaring Twenties, and her role as a spy for the French Resistance during World War II. She later returned to her native United States to join the civil rights movement, but remained based in France. In an elaborate ceremony at the Domed Pantheon, French President Emmanuel Macron paid tribute to a, quote, war hero, fighter, dancer, singer, a black woman defending black people, but first of all, a woman defending humankind, end quote. Well, bowing out on her own terms is Germany's Angela Merkel, the chancellor's farewell after 16 years at the helm. And what a helm it was. Days after the ceremony honoring Baker, the French president paid a warm tribute to France's outgoing chancellor, Angela Merkel, thanking her for, quote, having done so much to move Europe forward, end quote. After 16 years at the helm, Europe's and indeed the world's most famous and most powerful female politician finally bowed out. She did so on her own terms, undefeated at the polls and leaving the chancellorship with approval ratings envied by all her peers. Known for her sobriety, her composure, and her quiet strength, The chancellor, affectionately dubbed Mutti or Mother, leaves behind a legacy of cautious and unflashy leadership. No sooner had she left office, replaced by the incoming Social Democrat Olaf Scholz, than the first signs of Merkel nostalgia, quote unquote, swept the country, particularly among the generation of Germans that has known no other rule or ruler since 2005. What a legacy, unlikely to ever be eclipsed. Unbelievable. Just, I mean, untouchable. That's just amazing. Now let's just look at some other things which you may find interesting. Bear with me a moment. Hold on a second. Sorry, I caught a bad cold. All right, let's just look at some other things. 20 after 11. You will find this interesting. An article that was written by Dr. Louis Perron. He wrote an article called Build Back Better and How to Pass Major Legislation. He's based in Zurich, Switzerland, and he wrote this yesterday, but we only posted it for this morning. Build Back Better will not become law, at least not for the moment. Joe Manchin, arguably the most influential Democrat right now, finally made up his mind and pulled the trigger before Christmas. There were some harsh reactions to Joe Manchin's decision not to support Joe Biden's signature bill. People on the left and on the right often see centrism as wishy-washy or even betrayal. They thereby ignore that one can feel equally strong about a centrist position as they feel about theirs. If President Joe Biden could have gotten it passed, would actually have been a major political accomplishment. The majority in the House is extremely narrow, and the Senate is a tie. As a result of this, Democrats literally need everybody of their diverse caucus to pass something alone. Just for comparison purposes, Democrats had a majority of 60, respectively 59 members in the Senate when Barack Obama passed the Affordable Care Act and Donald Trump could not repeal it when Republicans had a majority of 52 in the Senate. This being said, I think Build Back Better was flawed in many ways. To begin with, expanding the social security net and fighting climate change are both honorable causes, but I don't associate them with getting out of a pandemic. In the Sunday talk shows, Democrats said that they are bad at messaging, other than the fact that politicians always say that when they are on the defense and face headwinds, and our writer agrees. They indeed are really bad at messaging because all they talked about with respect to Build Back Better during the past month was the price tag. Is it the $5 trillion, the $3 trillion, or the $1.9 trillion bill? It was actually quite a mismatch between political demand and offer as voters' top concern at the moment are rising costs. Well, next year, Americans will head to the polls for the midterm election. At this point, it looks like the Democrats will lose their majority in the House. And this might make it even more difficult for President Biden to pass his agenda. But it doesn't have to be that way. Ronald Reagan governed happily together with the Democratic majority in Congress. Bill Clinton arranged himself with Republicans after they won the midterm elections. And in fact, in the past, major reforms such as civil rights legislation, the federal highway system, Social Security reform, welfare reform, and more recently, infrastructure, all passed with bipartisan support. So if you're not aware, Dr. Louis Perron is a political scientist. He's a consultant, a TDX speaker based in Zurich, Switzerland. He is tweeting two takeaways about election campaign daily. And you could find him at Dr. underscore Perron, P-E-R-R-O-N. You'll find that on our website at the Yonkers Tribune. And just so you're aware, the post Build Back Better and How to Pass Major Legislation appeared first on Campaign Analysis. That's his website. It's copyrighted by him in the year 2021, and all rights are reserved. So, and there's also a link to previous articles and previous posts. He was very kind to notice that we had picked up his article last week at the Yonkers Tribune, and was also picked up by the Helsinki Times. And then he's got a great article called Sebastian Kurz and the Three Reasons Why People Run for Office, and three things that candidates should do early on. So there's a lot to read, and a very compelling writer as well. He also sends out articles, if you want, in English as well as in German, and all very lucid. And what's very interesting to me about him and his capacity in the political world is while most people are local in their focus with political candidacies, and they're probably the most compelling because they grapple with our local demeanor and our local sensibilities, yet at the same time, there are sensibilities that traverse larger communities such as nations and states and or Staats, wherever and however you divide a country. And that's what I find so compelling about Dr. Perron. He has the capacity and understanding, and that may lend itself to his linguistic capacity as well, because you need to have an understanding of language in order to appreciate the sensibilities of a nation and its inherited, its inherited demeanor, its sensibilities. And that's very difficult to do unless you can immerse yourself in the language and in the culture of the people to whom you want to speak and to communicate with. The beauty of Switzerland is that they have they speak a few languages, of course, French and German, a Romanesque, and of course, English. English is a lingua franca, you know, an international language, I think eclipsing French nowadays more than any other. And then I guess the concept of listening to someone of Dr. Perron's eloquence is evident in a country that can marry these disparate linguistic expressions and coalesce it into a not a disparate but rather a unified message that translates well no matter the language, and because the demeanor is very similar. Oh, and I forgot I'm sure. I haven't been to that part of Switzerland which borders Italy, but I'm sure that there are many who speak also Italian. So what a conglomeration of culture, and it has to permeate the entire cantons of the different cantons of Switzerland. Just brilliant stuff. So, it's 11:30. I'm not feeling very well. And I probably sound horrendous on the air, so I'm going to leave you early today. It's only Monday, and I don't remember who we have scheduled for tomorrow, so let me quickly look. And, I shouldn't have forgotten this, because here we are. We're going to speak to none other than Jeff Swartz and Brendan Beery. They are both CMU Cooley College professors at the Tampa campus in Florida. And we always speak to them on Tuesdays with respect to the Constitution. They'll be on from 10 to 11 in the morning. Then we'll be speaking to Michael Letts. He's got a charity that raises money for police officers around the nation who cannot afford to buy vests, protective vests, and he raises funds across the nation to supply police officers with vests that can stop the bullets of today. And it's called Invest USA. His name is Michael Letts. He's the head of this operation. He'll be on from 11 to 11:30. And then at 11:30, we're going to speak to Bob Marone. We spoke about him today with our Monday guest, John Daly from the White Plains Citizenet Reporter. He had interviewed DeMarone last week on his TV program, and we're going to speak to him by radio, tomorrow between 11:30 and 12. So that's our take today. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for suffering my coughing, but I'm all alone, so I'm not infecting anybody. And I'm not going out. So it's cold out there, and I just need to get a little bit more rest. But I'm warm, so there's enough heat, and I'm drinking fluids as well. So take care. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Goodbye. Get back to our studio screen, because I can't say goodbye without looking at the screen. And where are we? Here we are. Have a great day. And in case some of you will not be with us as we approach the new year, I want to wish you a happy new year with new prospects as we approach 2022. Let's hope it's easier on our sensibilities, on our health, and that our loved ones are safe, and just that we enjoy and respect one another. That would really be nice. What a great way of changing some of the dynamics into our future. Take care and be well. Goodbye.